I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Pro savings days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Some crimes are so heartbreaking or shocking, they change laws, change society, or even earn the label crime of the century. But the stories that made headlines in decades past aren't necessarily remembered today. I'm Amber Hunt, a journalist and author, and in each episode of this show, I'll examine a case that's maybe lesser known today, but was huge when it happened. This is Crimes of the Centuries. In the concentration camps of World War II, the Nazis killed 6 million Jews and one young woman named Anne Frank. They also killed her sister, Margot, and her mother, Edith. Her father, Otto, survived. Anne suffered through incarceration and starvation, but her deduced cause of death was technically of typhus, likely in February 1945, while held at Bergen-Belsen, the Nazi concentration camp located in northern Germany. The camp was liberated a scant 2 months later by British troops. She had almost outlived the horror. It was the second time she had almost slipped through. You surely know this part of the story. The Frank family, the Von Pell family, and a dentist named Fritz Pfeffer were found in a secret hiding space adjacent to her father's former business and arrested August 4, 1944. They were held for 4 days in local detention. From there, they were sent to Camp Westerbork, a temporary transit facility. Selected for deportation, they, along with more than 1,000 others, were shipped to Auschwitz on the very last cattle car to leave Westerbork. Jewish captives remained there, with their numbers exploding until 7 months later when Westerbork was liberated in April 1945. On the day of her initial arrest, Anne had been forbidden to take anything with her. So her diaries and some loose papers that she had used to supplement them had been strewn across the floor, unnoticed by Nazi SS Sergeant Karl Silberbauer and what was called his Jew hunting gang, which had rounded them up. Miep Gies, one of the heroic women who had helped to hide the Franks, recognized what the papers were and put them in her desk drawer before anyone took an interest that day. She wanted to return them to Anne when the war was over. Anne had a deep belief that the war was going to soon be over. The Allies had landed in Normandy June 6, 1944, and Anne had found a map of Europe that she pinned to the wall inside the hidden annex, and, all in hiding, had tracked their progress toward the Netherlands. She had so much to look forward to. A snippet from her diary read by an actor for a U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum video.
I know what I want. I have a goal. I have opinions, a religion, and love. I'll make my voice heard. I'll go out into the world and work for mankind.
But, of course, Anne didn't come home, and Gies gave the rescue diary to Anne's father. Otto had been liberated from Auschwitz by the Soviets in January of 1945, 5 months after his arrest. He returned to Amsterdam early that June to find that all of those who had helped his family hide had survived the war. He had similar hope for his family. But a month later, after talking with two women who had been in Bergen-Belsen, he was told that they had both been with Margot and Anne when they died. Only then did he read the diary, finding in his daughter's words a young woman he hardly knew. Fearful, hopeful, lonely, wise, incomplete. In her diary, she could be the ingenue or the little girl or the woman she would never grow to be. She could also document her first kiss. That was from Peter Van Pels, who in the diary was given the pseudonym Peter Van Dahn, who died 5 days after being liberated from the Mauthausen concentration camp. He had been gravely ill before the Americans arrived May 5th, 1945. Anne's diary wasn't supposed to be read by anyone. At first, Otto Frank only shared it with a few people, as he explained here in a 1976 interview.
Well, after I had read the diary, I copied it. Mm. And I gave a copy to friends of ours who had known us all. One of them was employed in a publishing firm. And he told me, you have not the right to keep the diary as a private property. It's a human document and you should publish it. And so I did.
He agreed that the world might benefit from the story of her innocence and pain. Anne Frank, The Diary of a Young Girl, was released in the U.S. in 1952 and is now sold in excess of 30 million copies worldwide, having been translated from the original Dutch into 75 languages. There are few in the Western world who have not read it by way of some assignment made by a diligent 8th grade English teacher. There are few who have not seen the play or the movie that was based on it. The story of her almost 2 years of staying tucked up in an annex at 263 Prinsenkracht in Amsterdam with her parents, her sister, the Van Pels, and Dr. Pfeffer, the latter with whom she shared a room, would have been a lovely parable about goodness triumphing over all if it had not been true and if she had lived. Instead, her life is a testament to all that was lost in that horrible war, big and small. 80 years ago, a young girl was made to live without fresh air and sunshine, made to hide without her peers to laugh with or learn from. She was made to stay quiet all day and tread lightly at all hours, lest she be heard. 80 years ago, someone who knew that the Franks were hiding told someone else whose job it was to rid the world of Jews. Who betrayed the family's whereabouts? It's the most frequent question asked of those who can now visit the Anne Frank House in Amsterdam, where she hid for 2 years. The answer is that no one knows. But there are a lot of possibilities, and they can, and have, been investigated and considerably narrowed down to an almost virtual certainty, if not a definitive one. And the answer, if it is the answer, is surprising. The betrayal is also a crime, albeit small in the crime that was that war, but still a crime that ended in 7 deaths. That it happened to be a girl we have come to know makes it, I guess, extraordinarily personal and utterly grotesque. Who betrayed Anne Frank? Who was an accomplice to her murder? Why was it necessary? How was it done? Who had to justify that to themselves in the middle of the night, when they alone would be left to grapple with their souls?
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
For those who need a refresher, the Franks were a middle-class family of German Jews. Otto's family had been in the country for centuries. According to the Anne Frank Fund, a foundation created by her father after the war, Otto and his wife Edith left Germany in 1933 during the early stages of the rise of Nazism, landing in the Netherlands, a traditionally neutral country where the family began to flourish. Only 5 years later, Adolf Hitler invaded Poland and, a year after that, occupied the Netherlands. On Anne's 13th birthday, she received the diary that she would confide in almost daily. She began each entry with "Dearest Kitty," an imaginary friend who could hear her innermost feelings and never judge. It would prove to be a truthful account of the progression of the war for Jewish citizens in much of Europe. As Anne wrote in 1942, quote, "After May 1940, the good times were few and far between. First there was the war, then the capitulation, and then the arrival of the Germans, which is when the troubles started for the Jews. Our freedom was severely restricted by a series of anti-Jewish decrees. Jews were required to wear a yellow star. Jews were required to turn in their bicycles. Jews were forbidden to use trams. Jews were forbidden to ride in cars, even their own. Jews were required to do their shopping between 3 and 5 p.m. Jews were required to frequent only Jewish-owned barbershops and beauty salons. Jews were forbidden to be out on the streets between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. Jews were forbidden to go to theaters, cinemas, or any other form of entertainment. Jews were forbidden to use swimming pools, tennis courts, hockey fields, or any other athletic fields. Jews were forbidden to go rowing. Jews were forbidden to take part in any athletic activity in public. Jews were forbidden to sit in their gardens or those of their friends after 8 p.m. Jews were forbidden to visit Christians in their homes. Jews were required to attend Jewish schools, etc. You couldn't do this and you couldn't do that, but life went on," end quote. That is, until July 5, 1942, when Anne's sister Margot received a summons to report to register for a transport to Germany for, quote-unquote, labor duty, courtesy of the Nazis. The next day, the family made their separate ways to where her father now worked. It was where he had built a spice and pectin manufacturing and export business before he had been forced to sell it to his Christian partners. There, upstairs, hidden behind a bookcase, a secret annex hid 8 people successfully for 761 days, or roughly 25 months. The small but manageable space had been set up by Otto and those he trusted in his firm in anticipation of the day they'd have to take refuge there. Those he trusted, Miep Gies and her husband Jan, Johann Kleiman, Victor Kugler, and Bep Vaskel, smuggled in food, books, and news for the Hidden. They also registered for correspondence classes that the Hidden could take and mailed encrypted postcards to loved ones. Those who helped knew it was against the law to do so. They could be put to death for the crime. Here's Miep Gies speaking in 1994.
"People often ask why I found the courage to help the Franks. Yes, it certainly requires some courage, some discipline, and also some sacrifice to do your human duty. But that is true for so many things in life. I simply could not think of doing anything else."
During the day, those in the annex had to be silent, refrain from using the toilet or walking around, lest the workers in the spice warehouse hear them. They couldn't appear at the windows, lest the neighbors see them. They couldn't leave to feel the morning breeze or to catch a few bits of sunshine. Just staying alive was the point of their existence, with the added knowledge that they had very little expectation that they would succeed in that. Anne's diary's last entry was dated August 1, 1944. Quote, "I keep trying to find a way to become what I'd like to be and what I could be, if only there were no other people in the world," end quote. What she wanted to be was a writer. The raid on the annex happened 3 days later. A CBS 60 Minutes reporter talking to Anne Frank House historian Dr. Hetienne Brooke about that day.
"It's a warm day, sunny, And around 10:30, between 10:30 and 11, a couple of men walk in.
They were detectives with a Dutch police unit working with the Nazis. An SS officer named Silberbauer led the team. They demanded to be shown around the warehouse.
They end up in front of the bookcase, which is hiding the entrance to the annex. And it's important, I think, to realize that two of the policemen present had been seasoned detectives, well-experienced. They had been searching this type of building in the inner city of Amsterdam before.
They knew there was likely something behind that bookcase.
Otto Frank, the lone survivor of the eight in hiding, never claimed to have discovered who betrayed them. Any effort by others, such as the Dutch police who tried twice to nail it down, never came to much. The many foundations set up in Anne's name and to honor her story have decided, after hearing many theories, that it's unknowable. And yet, it wasn't until 2017, when Dutch filmmaker Thijs Beyens, journalist Pieter van Twisk, distinguished former FBI investigator Vince Pankook, a group of 22 researchers, a handful of occasional psychologists, forensic experts, criminologists, and data specialists, armed with the helpful German habit of writing everything down for archival purposes, leaned hard into shoe leather and artificial intelligence to line up and evaluate every possibility. They found an enormous trove of connections and interconnections, a handful of living witnesses, and one astonishing document that worked together to eliminate most of the suspects and single out one serious likely betrayer. The work took a great deal of time, not just because many who knew anything had died, but also because thousands of wartime documents were spread around the world, with a substantial amount held in the U.S., Israel, Belgium, and West Germany, as well as in the city of Amsterdam's archives. Some of the more fascinating pieces of documentation found in the National Archives in Maryland were stashes of something called the Kopfgeld receipts. These were German receipts indicating payment, usually about $50 per person in today's money, for the identification of Dutch Jews in hiding. The cash inducement was attractive to those who had so little to eat and were paid only after the Jews in question had been arrested. That said, documentarian Beyens wanted to understand the whole nature of betrayal.
For me, it was really important to investigate what makes us give up on each other. The area where Anne Frank lived is very normal, and it's a very warm area with the butcher and the doctor and the policeman. They worked together, they loved each other, they lived together, and suddenly people start to betray on each other. How could that happen?
The investigation's complicated work, chronicled exhaustively in Rosemary Sullivan's The Betrayal of Anne Frank, came to a solid conclusion that, although they knew it would not stand up to the rigors of, say, an American courtroom, they would stake their reputations on. They had the guy and the smoking gun. Means, motive, and opportunity.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
The documentarians who believed they figured out who betrayed Anne Frank and co. in their attic annex came to their ultimate way of thinking after vetting theories about a number of suspects. Author Sullivan explains,
each of the suspects they came up with, 30 at the beginning, which they narrowed down to about 12, which they narrowed to 4.
Departing a bit from the norm, I think we'll just take the possibilities one at a time, bearing in mind that a 5-year investigation of a 75-year-old cold case takes investigators down multiple roads, all of which I can't enumerate here. Believe me when I say many, including one that held on the day of the Franks' arrest. Police weren't even looking for Jews in hiding, but for food coupons and fraud associated with it, were also looked into and ultimately discarded. In the betrayal of Anne Frank, Sullivan wrote, quote, "When Otto Frank returned from Auschwitz, he was not seeking revenge for the crimes committed against him and his family. He was looking for accountability. It was almost as if he believed that justice could be restored." By November 1945, he had tracked down two of the Dutch policemen who'd been part of the raid team sent to the annex, hoping to find out who had betrayed him and his family. And he looked for Tommy Ahlers, end quote. So did the team. They found that, early on, Frank believed that a disgruntled former employee named Job Johnson had been responsible. Frank had spoken to Johnson in early 1941, a chance encounter in the street between the two alienated men, and, making small talk, Frank had suggested that the German cause was having a few troubles. That was enough for Johnson to write a letter to Nazi authorities in town who considered such talk to be treasonous. That letter, implicating Frank as a traitor, was intercepted by Ahlers, a mutual friend, and shown to Otto. The cold case guys, who had also heard a rumor that Johnson had given up his two sons who worked for the resistance to the Nazis, found this potentially related and equally damning. That lead, however, proved false, as the betrayer of the two Johnson boys turned out to be a postman on their block. Job Johnson wasn't vindicated, but he was found to not have nearly enough clout to make the direct call to Nazi headhunter Lieutenant Julius Detman, the anonymous call that initiated the search of the annex and the subsequent arrests. But wait, why is Otto looking for Ahlers again? Seems Otto, hearing that Tommy was in trouble with the Allies in command now, wanted to testify that Ahlers had saved him from those early treason charges. That may be, but Ahlers, much to Otto's surprise, had been a Nazi sympathizer and virulent anti-Semite. He had, according to one prospective biographer of Otto Frank, intended to blackmail Otto in future doings. But Otto and his family had disappeared before the petty criminal could get his scheme rolling, and investigators proved Ahlers had no idea where they'd gone. On to a third route of betrayal, the neighborhood. Much, much, much later, when a cottage industry had developed to determine who informed on the occupants of the secret annex, it would be repeatedly remarked that it was a miracle they remained hidden as long as they did. That's because too many people had been involved, from the greengrocer who provided them fresh vegetables, to the baker who provided them bread, to the butcher who stretched the helper's meat rations, to the neighbors who could have noticed lights on during late hours, to those who burgled the business and heard noises upstairs when all else was closed. Suffice to say that the investigation, under a sub-investigation called the Residence Project, found the records of every close neighbor and a canvas of those nearby and recreated the scene, which exists much today as it did in the 1940s, and checked out sightlines from windows, shops, and streets. As Sullivan explains, the number of bona fide betrayal threats close to the address on 263 Prinsenkocht was, in a word, astonishing.
How did they last for more than 2 years without being discovered? Because danger was all around them. All these buildings here, buildings down there, this very block, there were sympathizers.
Luck? Yes. Did those Amsterdammers have other fish to fry? Almost certainly. A couple of things come into play here. First, it would be difficult to know if what people may have thought they had seen or heard came from the warehouse or from some non-Jew resident or from hidden Jews. Next, with the very common directive for air raid curtains applying all around, lights at night would not have been visible all that much. Lastly, this was late in the war, and many of those in the neighborhood were less willing to give up Dutch citizens, which all inside the annex were. In the end, all leads seemed to dwindle away to nothing under the constant cross-checking of data via AI instruction that sorted nonstop for months and months through millions of documents held by the city, the Nazis, the Dutch police, the Allied forces, and the resistance. Okay, so not the random neighbors. How about the infamous V-Frau named Ants van Dijk, who lived at times doors away from the Frank hideout? I know you're thinking, what the hell is V-Frau? A red V on Dutch Nazi propaganda material was a symbol used through the war. When it was over, more than 300,000 Dutch were suspected of Nazi collaboration and investigated for their crimes against the Jews and the nation. The Netherlands, which was considered neutral in the war, seriously frowned on those who joined the German army or who tried to thwart the resistance. Many were arrested and later executed. They were collectively called V-people or V-mannen, men, or V-frauen, women. Van Dijk had originally been a part of the resistance, but 2 years into the war, she suddenly switched sides and started naming names. And she named a lot. One of her frequent deceptions was to charade as a fellow recently captured Jew waiting transport to camps and, bemoaning her fate, tried to get others to share information about where more Jews were hidden. As part of her travels through the Netherlands, she frequently carried spices to and from Amsterdam, indicating that she could have had regular contact with Otto's company. Ants van Dijk was indeed determined to have lived occasionally and worked in the Annex neighborhood. She is known to have betrayed more than 200 people in hiding there and elsewhere. But here's the hitch. She and her team of activist Nazis were found to have already left Amsterdam by August 1944. And if she had told of the Frank situation, it would have been acted upon quickly. That is, much earlier in the year. So odds are, it wasn't her. A small addendum here. In 1948, Van Dijk became the only woman to have been executed in the Netherlands for her betrayal of her country.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a 1-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
On to the next most likely betrayer on the long list of possibilities unearthed by investigators. Willem van Maren, who had worked in the Spice Factory's warehouse. He was the only person ever investigated by Dutch authorities. If you recall, after Otto Frank came home, he asked police to identify and interview two men who were active participants in the raid on the Annex. His idea, of course, was to then have them identify where and from whom they had gotten the tip. The investigation at the time included testimony from 14 of those closest to Otto, but did not include Van Maren because Otto didn't even know him. The family had gone into hiding well before he was hired. But one of the known helpers, Johan Kleinman, told the authorities in 1948 that Van Maren had asked if Otto Frank ever worked there and seemed to be laying small traps around to assure himself that someone was living in the attic space. Kleinman called his behavior suspicious. Investigator Vince Pankook talking to 60 Minutes.
He was prime suspect number one after the war. He's working downstairs in the warehouse. He was very shifty, suspicious, actually a thief.
The warehouse manager did, as a matter of fact, have access to the courtyard property, where he could have easily seen that the building was larger in reality than it seemed from the inside, and a certain portion of it was not used in the daily life of the business. He was said to have mentioned to others that he knew there were Jews hidden there. But no one could agree on when von Marin had done that. Two separate witnesses said he told them what he knew, but later, the date of when he made the statement seemed to postdate the raid. So much talk and so little clarity. The case against von Marin was dismissed, only to be brought up again in 1963. Now, I'll pause a minute to tell you something you probably have already figured out. Amsterdam was a small town full of people who knew each other and spoke to each other daily. The array of political opinions and participation during the war was vast. Those who hid people lived next door to collaborators. By 1944, no one said much to each other just in case. Those who might have heard something also sometimes chose to look the other way. Still, everybody was hungry and poor and tired and scared and looking for some way to live through this whole ordeal. So, there were ordinary people who talked to the Nazi overlords and a lot called the police to report things for money or a favor or just a free ticket out of some trouble to come. And because those they told were German, everything reported was written down and kept. It was all there to be analyzed again during the fresh investigation of the matter in 1963, and then again between 2017 and 2022. That second probe by Dutch police seemed to be deeper, but just as futile. It was based on a remark made by Lieutenant Zillerbauer, who said he remembered that when the raid occurred, von Marin was asked, "Where are the Jews?" The warehouse manager was alleged then to have pointed Zillerbauer and his team to the stairs, which led to the bookcase. Others present that day refuted that version of events. Chalk that one up to inconclusive. On 60 Minutes, Vince Pankook was grilled about why he had nixed von Marin from the list of suspects.
He was very shifty, suspicious, actually a thief.
Seems like shifty, suspicious, thief, and yet you eliminated him as a suspect.
Not a betrayer, though. He was not anti-Semitic. He had incentive not to betray them, because if he did, he would have lost his job. The business would have been closed.
What specifically are you looking for when you're considering suspects?
We're looking at, did they have the knowledge? We look at their motive. You know, what would the motive be? Were they anti-Semitic? Were they trying to do this for money? And then opportunity, were they even in town?
Which brings us to Nellie Voskel, a sister of insider Bep Voskel, who was a dear friend to Anne, from a documentary by The People Profiles.
Bep Voskel's father had been let in on the secret of the family's whereabouts as the warehouse foreman, but none of the others knew that the Franks were living just above them.
Nellie was enamored of the occupying German soldiers whom she could carouse with. This led her to working for the Nazis as a secretary and moving around Europe at their behest. It's easy to see how she could have been the one who set the dogs on the Franks. But here's where it gets weird. In Anne's diary, there was a reference to a person she identified as MK. Anne wrote that this person was scared now that the Allies were bombing the region she was in. That would fit with Nellie's situation at the time of the diary item, May 6, 1944. This diary entry was excised from a revised version in later printings. For the record, Nellie had not remained in the Netherlands after the war and managed to elude a lot of questions. Editors, by the way, had also excised two more diary entries. The 2017 investigative unit had to find out who asked for the deletions and why. Joop van Veck was Bep Voskel's son and Nellie Voskel's nephew. In his book, Anne Frank, The Untold Story, He writes that his aunt returned to Amsterdam months before the family acknowledged her return. That is, she was there in 1943. Further, he writes that the family's relationship with his aunt Nellie strongly deteriorated during that time, with his grandfather physically beating her. It is during this time that the anonymous phone call was made to the Gestapo about the secret annex. The caller, as has long been established, sounded like a young woman. Bep Vaskal had been a true friend to the Franks and had done a great deal to keep them alive for those 25 months. According to her son, it was Otto who asked that Anne's inclusion of information about his aunt's collaboration be removed from the diary. He wrote, quote, "Otto Frank might have done this out of loyalty to my mother," end quote. The cold case investigators talked to Von Vick, who remarked about how in 1996 he mentioned to his Aunt Nellie something about Anne Frank in passing, and she promptly fainted dead away.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a 1-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
The investigative team, with all the tech tools at their disposal, was painstakingly going over age-old reports by hand when FBI-er Pankook was suddenly struck by realization. That was that sometime between the early von Marin probe in 1948 and the latter one in 1963, Otto Frank had grown less interested in finding out who had betrayed the annex. Why, he wondered, what happened to change the case? Did Otto know something? In early 1963, Otto Frank had mentioned to a Dutch investigator something about a note about a potential betrayer. He said he'd made a copy of it and given the original to the Anne Frank House archives. Found again, it read simply, quote, "Your hideout in Amsterdam was reported at the time to Jewish immigration in Amsterdam by A. Vandenberg. At the JA was a whole list of addresses he submitted," end quote. What? Who is this A. Vandenberg, and why and how could he be implicated in the betrayal? For starters, he was a well-respected Dutch Jew and notary who had been on the city's Jewish council, something the Nazis created in 1941 to mollify and control the Jewish population there. This was not unique. It was done in dozens of cities across Europe. Most interestingly, the council was forced to create its own newspaper so that Jewish directives could be printed there out of the daily gaze of the non-Jewish Dutch who could have rebelled against such strictures. The council was designed to look as if it was mitigating harm when it was merely measuring it out in portions. Those on the council were later said to have believed they could gain some influence with the occupying force. This meant that prominent Jews agreed to serve on it. But by 1942, Vandenberg had begun an effort to have his family put under Kalmyr status. That is, according to the Germans, who had strict guidelines about what amount of Jewish blood a person could have to be classified as a non-Jew, Vandenberg was fudging family ancestry records so his family could be declared German citizens and undeportable. He also seemed to have hidden one of his own twin daughters from the Nazis while he was busy trying to keep them safe with administrative paperwork. Still, this effort took time, and time was running out. It appears as if Otto Frank knew Arthur Vandenberg, if only slightly, and that the latter had no quarrel with the former. But twists and turns in either man's fortune in 1943 and 44 seemed to conspire against them both. But why would Vandenberg give up the Frank family? Well, maybe he didn't. At some point, it dawned on the investigative team, as it probably had on Otto, that the note that implicated Vandenberg was specific. It was a list of addresses. It is possible, probable even, that the notary didn't have a clue who was hidden at 263 Prinsenhocht, that he was in deep trouble with the Nazis for his deceptive attempt at getting Kalmir status, that every other Jewish council member had long been deported to the camps, and he and his family were next. Proof of the exchange of a list for lives? A fine-tooth combing of records of every internee at the Nazi concentration camps did not turn up the names of Vandenberg or his family members. He must have bought them their safety. And maybe this was somehow okay with Otto Frank? He knew about hard choices. It's also possible that fingering a Jew for the betrayal was simply playing into the hands of the anti-Semites, that it was some kind of German victory that the Jews turned on one another. But he only spoke about it once, and at that time, he was barely heard. Otto, in an interview with the Dutch newspaper, did say that the betrayer had been a Jew, and that he did not want to punish the betrayer's children. Nellie did not have children. She was not Jewish. Vandenberg was Jewish. He had children. At the University of Michigan in 1994, Miepke said, whether she meant to or not, that the betrayer had died before 1960. Nellie did not die until 2001. Arthur Vandenberg died in 1950. This, then, is how the search came to an end. Maybe. In response to the documentarians landing on Arthur Vandenberg as the likely betrayer of their namesake, the Anne Frank House issued this statement in response. Quote, "Research into the arrest of Anne Frank continues to be of great importance. It offers insights into the actions, choices, and motives of people under extreme circumstances. At the same time, it has to be said that key pieces of the puzzle concerning crucial aspects of the conclusions are missing from the cold case investigation. This means that the conclusions go too far. You must not mark someone down in history as the betrayer of Anne Frank if you do not have conclusive evidence for this. More research is needed," end quote. The cold case investigation and the book that put forth its conclusion was not without controversy and complaint about the approbation of the story. Rosemary Sullivan responding to the critics on the CGN Daily with Ellen Besner.
I really do believe that Vince and Peter and Tice and all the people involved, they were hoping that the betrayer would be Tony Allers or one of the fascists or whatever. The last thing they wanted was that it would be a Jewish notary, and really, really insist that Vandenberg is as much a victim of the Nazis as other people.
The only thing that makes me think they were right is that there is every indication that, once liberated, Otto Frank wasted no time in trying to find out who betrayed the Annex and his family and friends. Then, suddenly, he more or less dropped it. It's equally interesting to me that Miep Gies likely knew and never revealed as much. Maybe she figured it wasn't her place. Vandenberg died at about the same time that Otto ceased looking. Maybe he didn't want to implicate another Jewish man whose only desire, really, was to save his own family. These were not times for people to stand on firm principle if their children were at stake. To try to wrestle with such moral ambiguity is crazy-making. Hard choices were the order of the day. Is it admirable? No. Understandable? Yeah, of course. Anne Frank was not forced into Auschwitz, then shipped to Bergen-Belsen because one man made a list. Despite all that work to find out who betrayed her, She was killed by order of Adolf Hitler and carried out by those who pledged their loyalty to him. She was killed by those who allowed him to come to power and those who looked the other way when he did. It will never be anybody else's fault. In researching this piece, journalist Amy Wilson read The Betrayal of Anne Frank, A Cold Case Investigation by Rosemary Sullivan, Anne Frank, The Diary of a Young Girl, edited by Otto M. Frank and Miriam Pressler, and After the Annex, Anne Frank, Auschwitz, and Beyond. She watched a wide range of documentaries about Anne and the Annex, including a 60-minute segment of the Cold Case Investigation that laid blame at Vandenberg's door. Crimes of the Centuries is available early and ad-free through Grabbag Collab. Join us at patreon.com/grabbagcollab to hear not just exclusive content related to this show, but to also get access to several other shows on our profit-sharing network. Unless noted in the citations, this show was researched and written by me, Amber Hunt, and produced by Amanda Rossman and Henry Lavoie. Original music is by Bruce Hunt, Andrew Higley, and occasionally by my son, Hunt Van Benskoten. Other music comes from Soundstripe and Epidemic Sound. If you like the show, help us out by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. For more information or to recommend a case, go to centuriespod.com.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.